You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It is Monday, October 31st. Paul Pelosi, the husband of the Speaker of the House, the woman who is second in line to the presidency, was savagely attacked on Friday. And while surgeons were operating on the fractured skull of the 82-year-old grandfather, deranged right-wing fanatics, Trump media allies, and some of the most powerful people in the world were feverishly trying to stir up conspiracy theories that distracted from the central political headline of this story, that years of Republican propaganda and Trump-fueled fascism led 42-year-old David DePape to break into Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home, seemingly with the intent to harm her.
Well, she got it partly right. That was Mika Brzezinski, MSNBC, on Morning Joe. Thank you for joining us. October 31, 2022. I remind you, we are live streaming as I speak. While we're on the air live, we're live streaming at rumble.com. You go to rumble.com, enter in the search engine, one word, Larry Connors, USA. That'll take you right to our page. You open it up and you can see where you push live. Join us in studio. And I see more and more of you doing it live. I also see many of you watching it later as a podcast, which is great. Watch it when you can. A lot of folks like it. Say it's like seeing you back on TV again. But I get a little more emotional here, and rightly so. It is the Larry Connors USA show, and I am going to make some points. I'm no longer strictly a news anchor. In fact, I'm not a news anchor. I give opinion. I give you the facts the best I have them, and I do look for balance. It's a basic fabric I have, but at the same time, I will give you commentary and column and my opinion all the way through. So let's go back to the Paul Pelosi mystery. And so it began when the story broke the other day that a guy breaks into the Pelosi home while she's not there and attacks him with a hammer. But boy, did it get confusing from that point forward. There were so many different stories. We do not have all the facts yet, and what facts we have, they may not be facts and continue to change. Police are changing. Facts, or are they creating fiction? Is someone saying, hey, you need to change this, redirect it? Really? San Francisco police? I would not say that they're above doing that. If the FBI can be weaponized, surely the San Francisco police in the blue state of California could be. I'm not saying it is done. I'm just raising the question. Because here you have right away Mika Brzezinski saying all these right-wing conspiracy theorists are suddenly saying, you know, it's all this stuff and it's all that, and they're ignoring the headline that it's a MAGA-driven Trump anger viciousness that he sparked all the way back to January 6th and before. I knew they'd find a way to tie January 6th into it. And in fact, you're going to hear later, over the next 2 hours, Mika Brzezinski say, and they also found that he had some zip ties on him. Same kind of zip ties they found on at least one or two of those in the January 6th riot. Well, it's also the same kind of zip ties found on the guy that went to Kavanaugh's home with the intent to kidnap and tie up his family and assassinate him. Oh, but that got overlooked, didn't it? As did numerous attacks on Republicans by either deranged or leftists or Democrat, whatever you want to call them. I don't know what the true story is, but riddle me this. Am I the only one? Am I the only one? When I hear all this and confusing and going back and forth, both men were wearing only their underwear. They had each had a hammer, and then they didn't each have a hammer, and the guy breaks in, but most of the glass is outside the house. I mean, and there's no alarms, no security camera from police available, no camera video from inside the house. Granted, Nancy Pelosi was not there, so the Capitol Police were not assigned directly there, but would their house not still be guarded? Would they not have alarms that go off like crazy the moment anyone entered unless they were let in? I'm asking. Because it also brings back, I ask again, am I the only one reminiscing about how we all went around in circles on the Jussie Smollett story in Chicago when he said two guys with MAGA hats and put a rope around my neck and were going to hang me. You remember that story? All eventually dismissed. So we got a lot to cover on that story today. We have a major case in front of the Supreme Court involving racial divisions and discrimination. We also have Obama out on the campaign trail. It is a Hail Mary from the Democrats because a lot of the Democrat candidates do not want to stand beside Joe Biden. We have a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with a Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing. Covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality. Lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I am here to ask you to vote.
In Atlanta, former President Barack Obama highlighted Democrats' closing argument to rev up the base in his first midterm campaign appearance.
Tuning out is not an option. Despair is not an option. The only way to make this economy fair is if we, all of us, fight for it.
The former president rallied in support of gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams and incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock, taking several cracks at his GOP opponent, Herschel Walker.
Seems to me he's a celebrity who wants to be a politician. And we've seen how that goes.
Yeah, there he is. Former President Barack Obama brought in from Martha's Vineyard to campaign in this closing days of the midterm election. That's how critical this is. And especially in some of these swing states that are still very close. Now, the last numbers I saw indicated that Warnock is at least tied, maybe a point up or above, at this time, Herschel Walker, whom you heard Obama refer to then, saying it looks like he's a personality who wants to become a political star. Ha ha ha, wait, no, how that turned out. Oh, did you not catch the reference, vague as it might have been, or maybe right smack in your face, Donald Trump? And then when you look at the governor's race in Georgia, at last report, Kemp is, the incumbent, is +8. Ahead of Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams has had Oprah in again, as she did last time, and she still lost. And she's got Obama in this time, in these closing days. Do you think that's going to change things? We're going to look at that particular race a little bit more in the next hour. I want you to hear a little bit of the debate that went on between Kemp and Abrams when it came to crime, because what she says regarding crime and her view of it, it's as racist as you can be, and yet she's getting applause for it. So Obama has to be brought in, and he spends some time, as you heard, mocking Herschel Walker, and he's talking about how important this race is, and it is. And when it comes to Walker on crime, Obama said, and I'm quoting him, that Obama called Walker, quote, someone who carries around a phony badge and says he is in law enforcement like a kid playing cops and robbers. Then he goes on to say he was attacking Herschel Walker's issues of character. You know, that's tied to the woman that Gloria Steinem brought forward that said he definitely paid for my abortion 30 years ago. And also questioned Herschel Walker's habit of not telling the truth. And then describing Walker as someone who's going to be so loyal to President Trump, former President Trump, it means he's not really going to be thinking about you or your needs. Well, of course, each of these candidates, when they have a rally like this, they are speaking to the choir. If folks show up primarily to support whoever you're there to support and speak on behalf. But actually, in one of these rallies that Obama was attending, there were folks yelling back at him, yelling so loud. At first, I thought they were yelling, "Let's go, Brandon." But when I got to listening to it closer, they were yelling so much and so loud that Obama had to stop the speech two or three. He could not continue. He could not, even with a microphone, and the speakers could not overcome the crowd. And what they were really yelling is, "F Joe Biden," over and over again. Now, I don't take to doing that. I think that's wrong. But not everyone that showed up for that Obama presentation was going to be supporting his choices. And many of those sitting behind Obama, I watched, they just kind of sat there. They were somewhat amused, maybe a little disturbed, maybe troubled, but they kept their cool. They didn't really do anything at that time, and that's probably just as well. But the other point here is that we have this speech by Obama and him being out here doing these speeches in Georgia and elsewhere, wherever he's needed right now in these closing days, because Biden can't do it. And when I say Biden can't do it, he can't do it physically, mentally, I don't think. But the other point is, many of these candidates on the Democrat ticket, they do not want to be on the same stage as Joe Biden. That means you got to stand there and defend what he has been doing to the economy. And lately, it is amazing how the left has taken this current situation with the economy and said, Republicans made it happen this way, and we're making it better. Why? Look at the facts. Joe Biden the other day said, when I came into office, gas was $5 a gallon. Now it's half that. No, it's not half that of $5. It's still $3.40, $3.70 or more. And when you came in office, it was closer to $3 or under. So, let's don't let the facts interfere with the story. But here's what I did find interesting. CNN analysts were gathered talking about why Obama's on the trail. I'm not going to bother identifying each of them. Just understand, each of these are deep into the pockets of Democrats and Obama. They are ray, cheerleader, go, let's win. But when you hear them discuss why Obama's on the campaign trail in hot contested states rather than Biden, listen.
They're relying on somebody who was last on the ballot a decade ago to come in as their closer in the midterms. It tells you a lot about where things are.
I talked to two people yesterday just in regular conversations, like, you know, Barack Obama's so good at this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're counting on.
I think the fact that he's out there also tells you what we know about the election. Joe Biden can't be out there. So this is the only person they can put out.
Yeah. As I said, also, Biden can't be out there physically, mentally, and secondly, who wants to stand beside him? We'll come to that point again in a moment. So that was a take by CNN analyst on why Obama's on the campaign trail and not Biden. Ronna McDaniel is the chair of the Republican National Committee. She said, what you're watching is the Democrats are throwing a Hail Mary pass. Just throw it up and hope to hell it hits a target.
Candidates don't want to be with Biden. His approval rating is record low. They don't want to be seen with him. Tim Ryan has said, I don't want to be seen with them. Warnock doesn't want to be seen with them. Nobody wants Biden in their state. That's why he's stuck in Delaware. So they're pulling out the relic of Obama and hoping that that will help lift their chances. This is going to be a tight election. We need everybody to get out and vote. And I don't call it a red wave until we see it on Election Day.
That is Ronna McDaniel. And I would agree with her. You don't call a red wave until you see it. I will tell you now that today, I did go vote early. You can vote wherever you're listening to me. You can vote early right now. I went to my county main library headquarters. I walked in maybe 8:50. I'm out by 10:10 at the latest. Now, they're using paper ballots where I went, so you have to fill in each space. You can't just put a check. They want you to completely color the block so there's no confusion. I spent more time painting and drawing that kind of stuff than making the selection. But that's okay if it's going to be a verifiable, credible election. My point is, you can vote early now. You do not have to wait for Election Day. If you can and you want to, you should. And in fact, right now in many of these races, and we point out the Pennsylvania race the other day, before the debate took place between Fetterman and Oz, a million votes had been cast in Pennsylvania. I wonder after the debate how many voted for Fetterman were thinking, I want my vote back. Every one of the Democrat candidates, for the most part, has tried to delay any debate until the last possible timing because they're hoping on those incoming absentee ballots or early voting. They don't want to be seen on the stage until that time. Which brings us to an MSNBC question. Again, this is from an MSNBC anchor to the White House spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre, referencing what Obama's doing that Biden's not.
Why is the former president making this case and not the current president?
So I would disagree with that characterization of your question or how it was characterized there. The president has been talking about our economy every day. And the things that I want to be careful, the things that we saw the former president, President Obama, so passionately speak about are the things that are at stake, right? But also the work that the president, President Biden and Vice President Harris have done to get our economy back on his feet.
What have they done? They've given out a lot of money. They've given out a lot of money. Inflation is at a 40-plus year high. We have 11 million jobs. We have 6 million working. So there are plenty of jobs there. And why are only 2 to 4% of Americans working? Because Obama and group have been handing out checks left and right. You don't need to work if we're going to send it to you. And they're not. All right, so I got the latest poll. This one just coming in 45 minutes ago. Kemp leads Abram in the final poll conducted this by the University of Georgia. And AJC, I don't know if that is the Atlantic Journal, I would think. This is being reported by WSB TV in Atlanta, and they say Warnock and Walker are in a dead heat, as I mentioned a moment ago, but Kemp leads Abram in this final poll that they're conducting ahead of the election. Kemp leading Abrams 51% to 44%. That's massive. She cannot overcome that. Unless there's cheating going on. And when we look at the battle between Warnock, Senator Warnock, and Walker, these current numbers show Walker leading Warnock 46 to 45%. There's a 3% margin of error, so that means it could go either way. And the Libertarian has 5%. So that is still really blowing in the wind. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said, we can win, we will win, but it's not over.
I think we can be at 52 or 53 in the Senate.
Really?
I think we're going to take the House. We stop all the crazy crap. The first bill should be secure the border, go after fentanyl. The second bill that we should make people vote on is finding oil and gas that we own so we're energy independent from people who hate our guts. If we have both bodies, we can set the agenda for 2024. The only thing that worries me right now, this is a backlash election to the most radical agenda in American history. The reason Biden's in his basement, if somebody told you as a Democrat, Joe Biden's here to help you, he'd jump out the damn window because he's so unpopular. His ideas are not working, but they're killing us with money.
They're killing us with money. He's saying that in these hotly contested races, you're going to find Democrats running ads with the money they've got. Almost 10 to 1, minimum 5 to 1. All this money in Georgia and Pennsylvania and those hotly contested areas is coming out of California and all these elites out in California that think they know what's best for the country. If they had their way, everybody would live the way they live in California. Except, unless you're an elite. And if you're an elite, you don't really live the way other people do in California. You have maybe some protection around your house, but you don't have moats and big fences. And if you go downtown area, there's now a guy in San Francisco that apparently has constructed a plywood mini house on the street, a sidewalk in San Francisco, and apparently they can't make him move it. They can't get it. If that's true, then you're not just the tents out there. You're going to see multiple of these shanty homes being built along the streets of San Francisco. Tony Bennett left his heart in San Francisco. Many of us have left disaster, and we didn't do it, but it's there. Coming up, we're going to take a little closer look and more in the next hour about the attack on Paul Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi's husband. There are so many questions about this, plus a new concern about a Swiss COVID study. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors. You're listening to KYRO 1280 AM 105.3 FM. KYRO, Troy, Missouri.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
San Francisco police say he smashed his way in, a man on a mission, and confronted Paul Pelosi, but looking for Nancy. According to the AP, citing a person familiar with the situation, Pelosi told the intruder that he had to use the restroom. He was engaging with him, trying to hold him off. And in the restroom, that's where Paul Pelosi's phone was charging. And that's when he dialed up 911. When police arrived, DePap attacked Pelosi violently, smashing a hammer into his head and arms, fracturing his skull. Pelosi went into surgery. He is expected to make a full recovery.
Again, that's Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe MSNBC and her report on what's happening with Paul Pelosi as of today and the attack that happened the other day. And the question still remains, so many unanswered questions and what facts were given are being retracted. I'll give you a perfect example, even from NBC News. NBC News walked back a report Sunday that there was a third person in Paul Pelosi's home during the attack. Well, that's because originally the police said they indicated, the police chief Bill Scott indicated there was a third person when he recounted details Friday evening of what happened and police arrived. That was my question. How did police get in the house? Who opened the door for them? Well, he was saying a third person opened the door, but now apparently the San Francisco police is saying only two were inside the Pelosi home. That would be Paul Pelosi and DePap when they responded. Well, then who opened the door for them to come in? Or was the door open from supposedly the invader? And that brings the question to the glass outside, broken at the back of the house that he got in there. But most of the glass appears to be out on the patio, not on the inside. If you're breaking in, most of the glass would go inside. Some is inside. I don't know how much. But that's just another question. And originally, police were saying, and here's a quote, when police arrived, knocked on the front door, someone inside opened the door. Police say Paul Pelosi and a pop, each one had a hand on a single hammer. And they only moved in when the other guy started swinging? All right, let's go back to Mika, because now she's found a way to tie it to January 6th and Donald Trump.
Police say zip ties were found at the scene, just like the ones found on those who were hunting Nancy Pelosi at the Capitol on January 6th. And that's not the only similarity. Before attacking Mr. Pelosi with a hammer, a source tells NBC News DePapp shouted at him, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Where have we heard that before? Some on the right would say, don't jump to conclusions and don't connect that to this. A connection? What connection? I don't see a connection. Why would there be a connection? I mean, he was just deranged, right? In an isolated way. And by the way, voters, look over here. Crime is up. Look away from the parallels to January 6th, Trumpist shout. A review of David DePapp's online accounts shows he was part of a far-right world of hate, anti-Semitism, and conspiracy theories involving anti-vax hysteria and voter fraud.
Voter fraud. I think Stacey Abrams did the same thing. In fact, so did Hillary Clinton. They were cheated out of their elections. See, they continue on the left. And see, that's the breaking point for me. You're entitled to your opinion and your facts, but can you not at least be consistent? I'm consistent in my viewpoint. And if there's evidence that Trump or MAGAs, whatever, were behind something, I'm going to call it out. And I've told you previously, I didn't like January 6th. The day it was happening, it was wrong. And I also said it's going to come back to haunt us completely, totally. And they are over and over doing it. And now all this has happened. It's just going to refire all of that. Will that be enough to change anything in midterm? I don't think so. And when Mika says the right wants you to look over here, don't look at the attack. What are they trying to do all the time? They're trying to direct your attention to January 6th. That is gone. It's over with. Supposedly you're doing that. But this story just suddenly happening, and there's so many questions around it. As I said at the beginning, am I the only one that recalls a Jussie Smollett fake story? I'm not saying that happened here. I'm just asking. But coming up, we're going to change gears. We'll get into that on the Pelosi attack more in the next hour. But coming up, a new COVID study and a SCOTUS ruling, or rather pending ruling.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota for all customers and employees. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. I do have to make a slight correction. And see, that's the beauty of media like this. When a correction is made, I can't bury it. Like if you're watching right now at rumble.com, if you're not, you can go do that. Rumble.com, search engine, Larry Connors USA. And you can see me. I'm looking right at you. And if you're listening to me, you're hearing my voice directly. I'm having to say I made a mistake. At least I would have given you a wrong impression as we went to the break, talking about a pending Supreme Court decision. And I was rushing the words, and it's not pending. They are hearing a case today that is very important, but we're not going to see the results of this until they finish your term, and it's probably going to be, it could be June or so before you actually hear it. What this involves is the oral arguments today in a pair of cases that could overturn the use of racial preferences in college admissions. Now, this focuses on challenges to the affirmative action policies at Harvard University and the University of North Carolina. In both cases, the plaintiff is a nonprofit group called Students for Fair Admission. They're claiming that the affirmative action policies at Harvard and the University of North Carolina discriminate. Wait, don't you hear me? You're going to hear all this. Specifically, Harvard, where this thing originated. It's discriminating against Asian Americans, that otherwise they could make up a larger share of the student body at both colleges. Back in 1978, the Regents of the University of California versus Bakke, that was a court permitting the use of affirmative action in college admissions to achieve diversity, provided it did not operate like a quota system. Now, you have to riddle me this one. We're going to have an affirmative action program, so we're going to need a certain number of these minorities, be they based on race, ethnicity, color, religion, applying. But we can't have a quota. Well, then where do you reach a number? You don't. I mean, it is all just blowing in the wind again. And Asian students have said, we're being barred from Harvard. We make better grades, we put in more effort, more work, and we're not getting as many of our Asians inside Harvard. These are Asian Americans for the most part. They work and study hard, they're diligent. That's not to say others are not working hard, but some of them, by their ethic and the parental push and pressure on them, are overachievers to begin with. And that's a good thing. As long as they also grew up wholesome and have a full life, I would like to think for them. But these cases are being heard together. The one against Harvard involves a private university, of course. The one against University of North Carolina involves a public facility. The 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause only applies to private institutions when they take federal money. Now, you know Harvard's going to take some federal dollars if they can get it. Of course they do. So the case against Harvard focuses on civil rights law. The case against the University of North Carolina is a broader constitutional case. Harvard's already won this case in the district and appellate courts. But now, of course, it's up in front of the Supreme Court as another appeal. And Asian American students who were admitted, they say, is about half of what it would be if you based it on test scores and grades. So that Harvard apparently was found to be using a personality test that ranked Asian American groups lower than others. Now, how do you do that? A personality test. I mean, can you look at me and say that my personality is not good and dumb, according to you? Maybe I am, according to you. I mean, you may be a rocket science. Me, I'm not so much. But they were using a personality test, dismissing all the Asian American higher grades and everything. And, of course, it's been in the past dealing with people of color and women in particular and people of color. And an interesting thing here is that, of course, we have a new justice on the bench, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. You remember her. She cannot identify what a woman is. Remember, during her nomination proceeding, she could not answer a question, what is a woman? I might have to adjudicate that in the future. So you gotta forgive me if I say, based on a personality test, I think she's dumber than I am, because I think I know what a woman is, and I think most of you do. But she's already raised a question arguing with the affirmative action group is how their proposed college admission system would privilege a white legacy applicant over a black descendant of slaves. There they go, right down the race line again. All right, there's a new COVID study out. This is a Swiss COVID study. As I say, the oral argument's underway, and they'll be wrapping up shortly if they haven't already as I speak. But you won't see a ruling on the court for months to come. But there's a new Swiss study out. Now, this is coming from a group called Newsbecker. They present themselves as fiercely independent, proudly American, news source for citizens who value liberty, freedom, and constitutional rights. I always try to give you balance and understanding of the source. I don't try to slip anything past you. If I do, it would be my mistake, and I would not intend to. And I want to point out again that this is written by Kyle Becker, and it's stated that it's also a lot of this involves his opinion as well as study. So it might be his interpretation of it. But let me go through the facts, at least as he presents them, along with probably his opinion. New Swiss study shows that COVID shots increase the risk of myocarditis by 800 times in young adults. He said that recent Swiss study, now gaining traction, showing the risk of myocarditis, 800 times higher for vaccinated than unvaccinated young adults. And it says that prior to this study, there were no prospective data on post-vaccination myocardial lesions during vaccination. Only the most serious had been reported, many affecting men under 18. I wouldn't say that would be men under 18. They say the actual incidence of post-vaccination myocardial lesions is 2.8%, and that they affect women more, contrary to what was described in previous studies. All this is according to this new Swiss study. And the repeated doses of vaccine in order to maintain effective vaccine coverage could lead or should lead to greater caution because you might see more such cases. This is, of course, the inflammation lining of the heart, which could be a small issue, could be taken care of quickly. It could become a very big issue, even if it's being taken care of. The authors of the Swiss study state, "We know there are potentially serious side effects to the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine, such as myocarditis. In retrospective data, the main cardiac complication is myocarditis," and they say it does still remain rare, and then adds, "however, there's a selection basis based on only serious cases requiring hospitalization are being reported." So in other words, how many of them had this that were not being reported? That's why they're saying their study indicates the actual study, the actual number of basically young adults, men and women, could be 800 times higher than what you're being told. You may know someone personally, or maybe it's in your family, or you, that you've been told by your doctor, you know, we're seeing a myocarditis after you took the vaccine, or then the booster, or the second booster. Now, there's a professor at the University of California that discussed the findings, and he said, and looking at the numbers, that it's 800 times higher than the usual incidence that would occur. He states this is an elegant figure. This is sort of a waterfall figure, as we used to using in oncology. And what we've done here, for every man and woman in the study, they have found a comparable control that is a match. We can't perfectly match it, but we can talk about it, and this is the best available technique matching. And he raises a question, what are they trying to show you here? It may or may not be everything, but he discussed that these myocarditis cases in recipients of COVID-19 shots and boosters are so much higher in the Swiss study because in the U.S. they have what they call a passive surveillance. He said the U.S. system is is incredibly flawed, and many cases are slipping through the cracks. And that's why our estimates are less than the Swiss estimate, or estimates from Nordic countries other than Swiss, or Israeli estimates. Every one of those other countries apparently doing a better job about reporting it. And in the U.S., the CDC, Rochelle Walensky and Dr. Fake say, we're okay. We're good. Get your new shot. Get it soon. Get it for your kids. That's what they're pushing. I think you need to question it each and every time. Coming up, I want to bring you up to speed on our diesel supply. Are we about to run out before Thanksgiving? Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Counting Country, and Clayton.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So I've done some more study on a story I told you about the other day, and I had mentioned when I reported it Friday that I'd held off on it for a while, that I'd started to do something on it earlier the same week or even the week before. But some of the numbers were kind of confusing, and I wasn't sure what the exact number and what how to approach it. If I tell you we only have 25 days of diesel fuel left, and if we run out of diesel fuel, there goes the entire economy. Because you got trucks, you got trains, you got ships. There goes your supply chain from anywhere to the U.S. and anywhere inside the U.S. of A. But the fact apparently does still stand that our diesel supplies are critically low with shortages and more shortages to come, as well as price spikes. I'm looking at one of the latest reports I have from this would be from the U.S. Energy Information Administration that said on October 21, 10 days ago, that we're at the lowest at this time of the year since 1982. Now, by this time of year, it means that's what's being used, how it's being used. And, of course, part of it has to do with weather. It also has to do with supply and demand. It also has to do with how refineries are doing. And apparently, we do have an additional reserve available that might equate to 20-plus days of what 25 is out there, but apparently we're always operating on a threshold of 25 to 30, 35 days of diesel fuel available now without tapping into the reserve. But if you fall behind on your refining capacity, which we've been doing, dropping off more and more, then you're beginning to shrink that 25 to 30, 35-day buffer down and down until eventually you will have to go to the reserves, and there are only 25 days apparently inside the reserve. Some trucking companies are reporting, yeah, we can keep our trucks going, but they've got to go to different locations to get filled. I mean, to fill up the tanks we have for our units, our company vehicles. They try to maybe put them all together in one area and so forth, but they've got to move around, pick it up, and transport it back to their headquarters for their facility so they can get trucks fueled out the door at that point, and then hopefully they can get it on the road. But I'm looking at diesel retail prices and taxes are now $1.45 a gallon higher than for gasoline. That's a record, up just from 24 cents a gallon a year ago. That's how much more it was above gasoline a year ago, 24 cents, now $1.45. And they are talking about that if we don't rebuild the inventories to more comfortable levels, then we're going to see a slowdown, at least if we don't see a stoppage, a slowdown in freight movement and manufacturing activity. And that if we have a continued slowdown in the U.S. and or Europe and Asia, then you're going to see it get worse. And if they begin to back down, it's going to get worse again. There's no pretty picture in any of these numbers. That's the conclusion. And part of it gets down to this administration and its dependence or insistence on getting away from fossil fuel. Everybody to do electric, you cannot build electric battery big enough for an 18-wheeler to haul any cargo. I'm not a scientist, but might take a third of your cargo load for battery. And who wants to fly an electric plane, by the way? Now, they use aviation fuel. It's not diesel. But the same token, it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. I just wanted to re-update you on that because I ran into some people over the weekend, and they were getting a little fearful. I said, let me rephrase some of it for you. I hope you have a better understanding. Be concerned about it. Be aware of it. And we need more refining production starting up. And hopefully we won't have to dip any lower than where we are right now, because according to these reports, we are now at the lowest we've been since 1996. And before that, 1954. We're now at that low. Seasonal record low of only 25 days of supply. That's the lowest since 2008. I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. I know it's hard to follow when you don't have anything put in front of you on a TV screen. Just understand, this is a developing crisis. And I don't know that our Transportation Secretary Buttigieg has any idea what's going on. Or he does, and he doesn't care. A couple of lines again about the Pelosi attack. We're going to spend more on it in the next hour. Now, the other day, Elon Musk put out, since he had just completed his $44 billion deal to buy Twitter, he was referring to a tweet by Hillary Clinton after the report of Pelosi being attacked. And the former Secretary of State, Clinton, said, "The Republican Party and its mouthpieces are regularly spreading hate and deranged conspiracy theories." See, they jumped to that first, and then they turn around and want to blame those conservatives for trying to look over here, don't look here. Musk responded, "There's a tiny possibility there might be more to this story than meets the eye." He then posted a link to an anti-LGBTQ article in Santa Monica Observer. The link and the message are now, after being retweeted 30,000 times, deleted less than half an hour later. L.A. Times says that Santa Monica Observer is notorious for publishing false news. Okay. But I stand by Musk's statement. There is a tiny possibility there might be more to this story than meets the eye. And that's what we're going to get into in the next hour. I keep thinking of Jussie Smollett. Am I the only one?